Okay, guys, you ready to do the last show of the year?
Okay. Oh, this sounds awesome.
Let's do it.
I am Robert M. Price.
I'm Dr. Daryl Ray. And
hi, I'm Karen Lumley Kerr.
Hi, I'm Aaron Roy.
Hi, I'm Marissa Alexa McCool.
Hi, I'm Jerry DeWitt.
Hi, this is David Smalley from Dogma Debate.
Hi, this is Dan Barker.
Hi, I'm John McComb from The John McComb Show.
Hi, I'm Dr. Drance.
Hi, I'm Richard Carrier.
Hi, I'm Rhonda Tyson.
Hi, I'm Seth Andrews. I'm host of The Thinking Atheist.
Hey, guys, I'm Kara Santa Maria.
Hi, I'm David Fitzgerald.
Hi, I'm Brian Keith Dalton.
Hi, this is Tom and Cecil from Cognitive Dissonance, and we took a left of the valley.
We did take a left of the valley.
And a wrong turn in Albuquerque.
And then the left of the valley goes right to a glory hole. It's like right to a glory hole.
I know we shouldn't have to scream that we're atheists. You know, we don't have non-astrologers and all that. But with the religious people taking over the world, I mean, we can either speak up or be pushed into a corner.
I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen. I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance and you just call it faith in unsubstantiated claims. That's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist.
One more time, crashing down faster than a New York ball. This is Left of the Valley. My name is Kevin, and I ask you, don't you hate it when someone answers their own question? I do. Joining me one last time this year is the team that will tell you where everyone, where there's a will, there's a relative. She thinks that Velcro is mainly a ripoff. Nancy.
Oh my gosh, I drove through the rain, the snow, the blizzard, the horrible weather to hear that. What fun, I'm glad I came.
And he can't explain puns to kleptomaniacs because they take things literally.
Scott.
Guys, welcome back, and thank you for braving the weather to be here with me one more time in 2017.
Yeah, let's hope it gets better from today, right?
Yeah.
I just braved the lineups at Tim Hortons. I mean, that's...
that's commendable, sir. That is commendable. So today we're going to be simply doing a review of the 10 best... the top 10... of 2017, as per our audience, because they essentially voted the most downloaded shows, and we're going to be playing clips of those. But the news isn't stopped, so let's do a little bit of chit-chat first. Did you guys hear that drunk driving will be decriminalized in Alberta in 2018?
No.
What?
How did that come about?
Yeah, well, they're trying to essentially mimic what BC's been doing. Officers will be given essentially discretion to either impound or fine, depending on their judgment. They're following BC's lead, over the limit will get you a suspension for 3 months instead of an automatic court date and everything like that. So, and if you also have to join the Interlock program. So it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on that.
So So it's decriminalized. There's still a penalty.
You're still a penalty.
But if you are driving drunk for the second or third time...
Yeah, how do they track
how
that?
How does
now?
That...
That's a good question.
Do they say, well, you've got a suspension, so that's as good as a black mark against your...
What they're essentially doing is they're giving the police officers much more judging powers instead of letting the courts do that. So they're trying to free the courts from having to deal with these cases, and the police officer on scene will use his judgment to essentially decide, okay, you know what, bud, you had like two convictions or something like that, we're taking your car away, or we're just letting you with a slap on the wrist or something like that. So a bit the same way that our officers at the border have leeway in they can discriminate whichever way they want. I think the police officers will be doing the same thing in Alberta.
Well, that's you know, hopefully it works. If it frees the courts, you know, for other... Of course, there's a traffic court.
I think they're choosing the wrong way to free the courts, though.
Yeah.
If somebody's drinking and driving, and it's been criminal for 30 years plus, then take their license away and don't give it back to them until they prove that they're not drinking, that they're not going to drink and drive again.
Yeah.
Instead of letting them drive and then get drunk again and then go to court... And then letting them drive and then get drunk again and go to court. And then letting them drive and get drunk again and go to court. Well, where's the problem? The problem is not that the criminalization of it is dragging the courts down. The problem is you've got idiots who continue to drink and drive. Take their license away. And if they're caught driving, summary execution on the side of the road. I mean, come on. This is simple.
Zombie execution on the side of the road?
Mad would agree with me. Okay.
The comments of Scott are not necessarily those of Lethal Valley.
That's driving is to have a pile of dead bodies between here and Alberta.
Well, you got to admit, you're not going to have any repeat offenders, are you?
That'll make you, you know, think twice before drinking that second
beer.
No,
I there's too many people getting hurt because of the drunk drivers, mm-hmm. and that's where the problem lies. And I think by decriminalizing it and lessening the consequences, they're not going to help the issue.
Mm. Yeah, but we'll have to see, you know, how it works and how it's worded. Exactly. But yeah, let's keep them off the road, whatever it takes.
I hope that your optimism shows to be true. I really do.
I don't know whether I'm optimistic. I'm just sort of, how does it all work?
We'll keep an eye on it for sure.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear in Iran, the hard economic times have been the countries have been facing have spawned some protests. And some protesters are basically saying to the government, forget Palestine, help us instead, you know, to the Iranian government.
Good for them.
But it seems something interesting. It seems that the people are thinking that the Iranian government decided to relax the laws for the dress code for women. After 39 years, women will no longer have to wear the hijab in Iran. They won't be arrested, nor will a judicial case be filed against them. But this only applies in the capital. So some people are saying this is a distraction from the economic woes that the Iranian government is facing.
A distraction from the economic woes.
Distraction.
I think it's a good distraction.
It's a good thing. It's a shame it should go to the entire country, not just the capital. But, you know, either way, we'll have to keep an eye on that one, too.
We'll see how that one plays out.
Yeah, see, you know, men may have to take responsibility for their actions someday.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Who knows?
Did you guys, you know the whole Christian bakery kerfuffle that's been going on for a long time now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I hate it when they bake Christians. They don't taste good.
Yeah, especially with no sprinkles on top. It just, you know.
Oh, those candy sprinkles are awesome.
Christian sprinkles. Christian
just
sprinkles.
Christian sprinkles.
Well, the original bakery was a place called Sweet Cakes that was owned by a couple, Melissa Bakeries. Aaron and Melissa Klein were the couple. Well, the court decided to uphold the $135,000 fine that they were fined for not baking a cake for a lesbian couple in Portland. They've already paid this fine, but they challenged it in court. And the court decided, no, you guys deserve this. The judges found out that they found that Aaron and Melissa went also too far by sharing the address of the couple in question and urged Christians to send them hate mail.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay,
yeah.
That would be definitely upholding the fine.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So they got what they deserve at this point, I think.
Yeah. Unbelievable the lengths that people go to, you know, just to prove what?
No, I believe it's in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not bake cake for gays.
Yeah.
I think it's the 11th commandment.
Well, I could see if you own your own business and somebody comes in who you don't want to serve, then don't serve them. That's fine. You do have that right. But that's where it stops. You can't go and say to other people, look at that person. Penalize that person. Oh, yeah, make fun of them. Hate them.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't do that. Now,
well,
come on.
You have the right not to serve them, but you can't be discriminatory.
You can't be discriminatory, no.
Drunk and disorderly.
You need a good reason not to serve them.
You know, they've got a shotgun in their,
in
their hand. Yeah, exactly.
Just because
you're
gay.
Well, I don't know. If they've got a shotgun in their hand, I'm thinking I might serve them.
Yeah, you might. You might.
That's, you know, whatever they want.
Yeah. I never know what's going to come out of my mouth. At any rate.
If you have a reason, a valid reason for not serving someone, but you got to be careful, and I hate to say this as much as it hurts, a person's convictions, if it's their own business, they're not part of a chain, they're not part of a government service, they own their own little piece of the pie. It's their choice who they let through that door and don't let through that door. And you have to be really careful because when you start stepping on that, it becomes a police state. You got to be really careful about that.
Well, a retail business, by definition, has to be open to the public. So they, you know, the government can step in if there is a pattern of discrimination toward a certain class of individual, or they discriminate by only allowing a certain class of individual to buy their goods. But this whole thing is going to be resolved by the Supreme Court in the U.S.
and what you have to be you have to be careful of. So if I want to open a left-handed store and somebody who's right-handed comes in and I say, I'm sorry, I can't help you, now all of a sudden I'm getting fined?
Well, hold on. Somebody came into your left-hand store, you wouldn't stop them from selling a left-handed butter knife or something like that,
well,
right?
I'm playing devil's advocate here.
No, I know. I understand what you're saying here, but I mean, if you're saying you wouldn't kick a right-handed person out of your left-handed store, you would just say, well, I've got left-handed stuff. If you want to buy it, fine, but right, I mean, but there's nothing that can help you.
Well, but if they ask you to make a right-handed thing, you say, I'm sorry, we don't do that here.
But that's a different thing, because you do have stores that cater to left-handed people, just the way you do with people who have back problems, and you have the back store. So you can be a niche store that addresses a certain problem or a certain condition, you know, by the kind of goods you sell them, but that's not that's not discrimination.
No.
Your store is narrowed. It's
if your store said, I'm sorry, we don't serve black
product
people.
Line.
If your store said, I'm sorry, we don't serve black people, then you're discriminating.
Exactly.
You're discriminating.
That's... Exactly. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, happened years ago in restaurants where black people refused to be served. But this is going to resolve itself in with the Supreme Court and the masterpiece.
Well, it's already done now.
Yeah.
Maybe
the Christians will realize once again they're on the losing side of history.
Well, they're on the losing side. There's no way they're going to win because it's a protected thing. I mean,
let's see. Gorsuch has a different narrow view of things. So
there's still rumors inside history. There was a time where the church forbade street lamps when the first street lamps started coming out. Well, yeah, because it was against God, because God made the night to be dark.
Oh.
You know, this is the stupidity of Christianity. It's always super conservative. It's always against progress. It's always against everything that's good.
I never understood the cake thing anyway. If somebody comes in, I don't care if they want an upside down cake that's purple with pink polka dots. And I could care less what their sexual preference is. I could care less what color they are. I could care less what culture they are. Yeah. I'm going to make the damn cake for them because they want a cake and they're willing to pay me for it.
Well, that's because you're a reasonable human being. Yeah. The reason that most of these people cite is that they don't want to promote a lifestyle that's prohibited by the Bible, and since they're Christians, they can't therefore bake a cake for
a lesbian
couple, because to them... it's promoting that lifestyle, which is a bogus argument to begin
for a cake.
With. But
like,
it's a cake. I know it's a cake.
I know it's in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not bake a cake. I know.
Oh. But it's the reasoning. It's the prejudice behind the baking. Mm-hmm. So we by this time next year we shall see.
Let's hope.
I'd bake him the cake and do something special. I mean, hey, you're getting married.
That's right.
Good for you. You know.
That's right. No, absolutely.
Okay, in lighter news, did you guys also hear that Amazon apparently removed, and this is true, circumcision training kits from the UK site? Apparently, for about 365 pounds, it included a model of a boy's genitals, and you could actually practice circumcision.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know.
I can't see any issues there.
Circumcision is unregulated in UK, and that's just the tip of the story. Apparently in 2009, they had about 185 boys in Birmingham Hospital that had circumcision-related injuries. So,
isn't circumcision itself an injury?
You could almost say that.
I mean, it's the whole thing just made. I mean, it's like, yeah, let's have a what do you call those? A beheading. Yeah, we're going to try a beheading party at our house.
Well, I could just see, especially in the UK, they have some really strange.
Well, it's because it's unregulated, right?
Child gangs. Can you imagine young women, say teenage girls, running around in gangs circumcising boys?
What?
I could just see it happening. They get their little kit, and then they decide to go on a rampage.
Oh, God.
I mean, you know, it's just, I mean, the whole thing about the kits, it's like, eventually did they want to have like the Fuller Brush Man? You went door to door selling circumcision circumcision kits?
I got circumcised in a hair salon.
Here's a new use for the jinsu knives.
I mean, they just had that, said somebody just, I saw that in FARC, FARC.com, F-A-R-K. It's an amalgamation site for news, and they do... funny stories. They add funny captions to them, add funny tags to them. And this one was a woman ended up going into a hair salon and getting a butt enlargement, like the plastic surgery.
All in one stop.
And she died. She died from it. And it's like, okay, so this place wasn't licensed to do this surgery. And, well, it's a hair salon. I mean, of course it's not. Why would you do that, right?
First of all, so I'm thinking,
now you could do circumcisions in these places.
A butt enlargement? This is a thing?
Some kind of butt thing going on.
Butt implant? Yeah. This is a thing?
Yes, it's a thing.
Can they just grow a big butt the old-fashioned way? Just eat more?
I don't know. It just, I mean, the whole thing when you say circumcision training kit, it's just, it's like a bad joke.
I could see that for doctors. I could see that type of there
is
kit,
yeah, but even the most medical association will say there is no medical reason for this.
That's
to
right.
Happen.
That's right. But there are people who want their child circumcised,
which is always a religious reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. And last but certainly not least, our new Governor General Judy Payette has announced 125 new orders. I guess nominees for the Order of Canada.
Awesome.
And
hey, they probably got some pretty good names on there, too.
Yeah, I couldn't help but notice.
Did you make the list, Kevin?
No, I didn't. Oh. Maybe next year. But right I couldn't help but notice that William Shatner was actually among the nominees.
He finally got nominated.
For the
man's Canada. Almost dead.
Congratulations, William.
Yeah, congratulations.
Death, disease, destruction, horror. That's what war is, Councilman. That's what makes it a thing to be avoided. You've made it neat and simple. So neat and simple. That you've had no reason to stop it.
All right.
And you've had it for 500 years.
Actually, I think, you know, after all that he's done all of these years, I think he's a worthy recipient.
I'm sure he's happy to receive that.
No, sure.
What commercials was he in that were really funny? He was in a couple of series
line.
Of commercials.
He did the Priceline
commercials. Oh, I don't remember. There's one line from William Shatner, which I thought was always great. I've always remembered that, where somebody actually called him, he was signing autographs one time, and somebody called him a has-been. And he said, well, you know, it's better to be a has-been than it never was. Well done, sir.
Well done. Nice slam. Dude, okay. You've been owned.
So today we're going to take a retrospective look at the year 2017. And we're going to come up with our top 10 clips that we're going to play of, as voted by the listener, as many downloads. Hey, you guys want to say something about 2017? It's been a weird year, hasn't it?
It's been a really strange year. But I always think odd number years are just odd anyway for some reason.
Yeah.
What good things came out of this?
Well,
year?
I mean,
other than the fact that we're all here and intact and we did some great shows, what world things came out of this year? Good things.
Well, if I had a bit more time, I would have researched probably some of the scientific things that have happened this year. Isn't it this year that they had the they landed on the comet? Was that Philae? Was that in 2016? Remember when they landed on the comet there?
Yeah. I think that was 2016.
Oh, what could have been?
I think the women, the Me Too, and the women's marches, and the empowerment.
Yeah, they were. They were also named Times Person of the Year.
Strongest things that came out of this year. You think it peaked, or you think it's going to continue?
Oh, that's a good question. I have a feeling that it has peaked because I think like a pendulum swing. You know, sometimes it swings a bit too far. I mean, right now there's already some pushback because there's some people that I was listening. For example, I don't know if you guys know about the Young Turks and Yank Uger.
Yes,
he's the host there, and somebody pulled out a comment that he made 20 years ago. that could have been certainly seen as a sexist or something like that. And they're some people are bashing with acid. It's a comment he made 20 years ago.
And he's and changed a lot.
Yes, he has. And he's withdrawn the comment, and you had to actually go and dig to find this. You really had to go dig deep to find this.
I've watched his program. He's a pretty forward-thinking person.
Yeah, exactly.
And he changes with the times. He realizes that things have to change, and he changes.
Exactly.
You can see it in his... over the years.
I mean, right? I'm certain there's going to be more people that are going to come out that are, you know, pigs, essentially, and they're going to be outed out, and that's great. But also, we got to be careful that it doesn't turn into some kind of witch hunt, too, right?
Well, I think it'll level off. I think, you know, this is the beginning of the movement or beginning of, you know, trying to figure out what's an infraction, what should you ignore, what really is a...
Well, I don't like digging up people's... I don't like digging up people's history. If they haven't actually hurt someone, or, you know, purposely hurt someone,
and
purposely is the with intent, right? You're digging up something somebody said 20 years ago. Well, their attitudes change month to month, week to week, year to year. Their attitudes change because they learn.
Yeah.
My attitude now is a lot different than it was when I was 20 years old.
Yeah, I mean,
and it would be very unfair to pull up my attitudes from when I was 20 to now that I'm 48. I'm a different person than I was then.
Well, yeah, and we all say stupid things that we regret the minute they're out of our mouth.
Notice that she's looking at me when she's saying that.
Yes, stupid. But as soon as she said stupid, she eyed you up.
I moved. But the point is that... if you continue doing the same stupid things over and over, that's
now,
a pattern and it's different. But if somebody says, you know, hey, good looking, want to go out for a drink, and that's just a one-off.
Well, I've never understood.
Nobody should lose their job or be penalized for that.
Oh, yes, they should. They should be beheaded in the town square.
And it's also why I've always said, you know, you can't also judge people from history with the morals that we have today, right?
You can't, because their whole lifestyle, their values, the influences.
They were people of their time, too.
Yeah, right? They were people of their time, right? And, what we recoil at now, back then, was perfectly acceptable. It was the norm.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think the main thing is that women, hopefully, will now be taken seriously.
Yes.
And
yes,
how that remark or that action affected them at the time will be listened to a lot more seriously. So, and I think that's
and hopefully it gave them the courage to come
exactly.
out.
Exactly. It's a good thing. It's like anything else when people mm-hmm. have been repressed because of what other people have done to them or they haven't been able to progress or have equality, mm-hmm. then that needs to be remediated. So it will be.
Okay. So Excellent. Going on our top 10.
Okay, here we go.
Let's go.
Number 10.
So our number 10 position, as voted by our listeners, was our good old friend Pete Bogosian.
Oh.
Remember we had Pete? Pete actually came on the show and he was talking about the feasibility. And he was actually giving us, if you
that
go back
awesome.
In the archives and you listen to that course, that show, it was actually a bit of a course on how the philosopher was trying to bring the feasibility and how you should see criticize yourself when you make a claim out there.
We really had to think. And on that episode, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
So
that's always been a problem for me.
Let's listen in to what Pete was saying there.
And we'll talk about that in a minute. And I said, you know, who can I talk to? And he didn't respond to me for whatever reason. And so then I told my colleague, I said, I need to go on a show, philosophy to talk about the feasibility. Who should I talk to? And he said, didn't you just get a grant for the public understanding of reason and rationality and critical thinking? And I said, yeah. He said, well, what do you hope to achieve by talking to philosophers? You should be talking to someone who doesn't have a PhD in philosophy, and your success should be measured on whether or not you can make those ideas accessible to people. And I thought, you know what? He's absolutely right. So fortunately, I then got your email, which I appreciated, and then I sent you the two papers. I published one, and the other one is under review. And hopefully we can now, with that out of the way, we can now dive right in. And again, my goal is to make this crystal clear. It's a very complicated idea. It's like chess, simple on the face of it, but super complicated when you dig down. So that's my goal.
Okay, so you thought you'd start with the bottom of the barrel, call the people that left in the valley first, right? And work your way up?
Well, I thought that I would start with people who were not professional philosophers. And the reason that I need to get this quote-unquote out of the way is because after this, it's just all book all the time.
All right. And that was Peter Boghossian.
You know, that was such an awesome show.
Yeah, one thing I really like and admire about Peter is the fact that he really is a deep thinker, and it is complicated, you know, the ways that he goes. But he takes great delight in simplifying it and then realizing you've got it. If you're not a philosopher, if you're not an instructor, if you're just the bottom of the barrel like we are.
Bottom of the barrel.
If you're the bottom of the barrel and you get it. He takes great delight. And that's why he's such a great instructor.
And he's a great guy. And I know this year has been rough for him, and he's been taking some flack and all that, about some of the stunts he's pulling and all that. And when you follow his feed, you know, he has a tendency to try to poke the bear a bit, because as a philosopher, that's what you have to do, right? You have to kind of find the limits and stretch them. So, anyway, Pete was always a great guy to have on the show, for sure.
He is. That made for great. Anytime we have Peter Boghossian on, it's a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. All right.
Number 9.
Coming in at our number 9 position was our old friend Dr. Del Rey. Dr. Ray, that we always love to chat to. He's always a fun guy.
He's got so many different things he can talk about. He always brings something different to the program.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we had him twice on the show this year, and he's always a fun guy to be around. And this clip is about him talk about the recovering from religion and how he started that, which, of course, is something that we're still working on right here to try to bring a chapter of recovering from religion right here in the Fraser Valley. So let's listen to that. Well, this music can only mean one thing. It's our favorite psychologist is on the line, Del Rey. He is the high priest of the Flying Spaghetti Monster Church. He's a snappy dresser and a snazzy dancer. Daryl, thank you so much for joining us again on Left Out of the Valley.
Well, there you go. Lying to your listeners again. I'm a lousy dresser and a mediocre dancer. So there you go.
Yeah, but in Kansas, everybody's a mediocre dancer.
I do other things very well. I'll just say that. So how's that?
The comments of Daryl, not necessarily those of Left of the Valley subsidiaries.
So I started this group, and it started literally with a single meeting in a back room of an IHOP.
Oh my gosh!
In 2009, 11 people showed up. I only gave them a week's notice. I announced it on Meetup, said I'm going to do this. 11 people showed up, which I only knew one of those 11 people, and I just asked two questions. I said, "How did religion help you? How did religion hurt you?" And 3 hours later, the restaurant manager's kicking us out, closing the restaurant.
Wow.
And I realized at the time this was cathartic. People need somewhere to tell their story and to talk about the challenges.
And there was Dr. Del Rey.
Yeah, that was a good thing.
That was a really good thing. He started.
And of course, I had to explain that clip about the flying spaghetti monster is because on a previous show, I said that Dr. Rey was one of the high priest, and he sent me an email, says, no, I am the high priest of Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and it says this kind of rhetoric might not get you meatballs in Flying Spaghetti Monster heaven. So
how do you get ordained in the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
You just got to come up with a really, really good penne or fusilli or something like that, and you judge upon what you make.
All right, I'm going to have to work on it because I need that colander.
He's such a guy of good cheer, and he's so responsive. If he can help in any way, shape, or form, he's usually one of the first guys that raise his hand and say, okay, I'll be there.
Yes, and he's like you. He's got boundless energy as well, right?
Yeah,
he's always out there. He's always, at his age, he's in his 60s, and he's still partying. Like, he parties more than I do.
He's just a kid. What are you talking about at his age? Let's watch it here, Kevin.
Not everybody's 5,000 years old like you, Nan, my dear right. Nancy, but...
Hey, be careful now. She's timeless.
She's the Wandering Jew. We know. Oh, perfect. All right.
Number 8.
And coming up on number 8 is, again, our friend Dr. Del Rey. The people just loved him this year. You know, this is the first time he actually came on the show this year, and he was talking about hypnotism in church.
Right.
Because we did that show about how the church and the sermons and all that are designed to keep people in their seats and actually kind of indoctrinate and brainwash them in a way to actually give more to the church.
Yeah, we had a lively discussion on that, I remember.
Absolutely. So let's listen in to what the wisdom of her friend Dr. Del Rey once again.
We met Del Rey at Imagine No Religion 4 at the time, and he actually gave her a vibrator.
So. Awesome.
Oh, right, yeah. Now, did I autograph it? That's the question.
Yes, you did. You did, too. So that's the great thing about Dr.
There's
Ray.
There's only like 3 women on the planet that have an autographed vibrator from me, so those things should be worth a lot of money by now. Unless, of course, they've been used. Then I'm not sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, she could have framed it and put it on the wall. We don't know.
We don't know. We'll never know.
Go on television, for example, or YouTube or something, and just watch one of these evangelical ministers preaching. And then you ask yourself, if you saw somebody standing out on the street talking like that, would you think they were crazy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you probably would. They repeat themselves 4 and 5 times. They talk in cadences like this, and they emphasize things that don't seem to need to be emphasized, and they tend to talk about the same rate as you breathe. I mean, I'm doing it as we speak right here, right?
You got me hypnotized.
I actually was talking
Scott,
a little
put
faster.
Put your pants back on. Put your pants back on, Scott. What are you doing?
Number 7.
Coming down to number 7 spot is, of course, none other than the incredible Seth Andrews. What can you say about Seth? He is the consummate professional. The man's been doing this for a long time now, and he is probably the most popular atheist show out there, The Thinking Atheist, which has, of course, prompted a lot of us to even do our own podcast. He probably had some influence on this show, too. And the man is always incredibly gracious. Let's listen in.
Around the age of 37, I finally decided to start asking hard questions and not take just go with it, just have faith, just trust Jesus as a suitable answer. It was a video by Christopher Hitchens that really sort of spurred me along. I just stumbled upon it on YouTube, and before I knew it, I was on this journey. And by the time I hit November, December of 2008, I realized and said out loud I was an atheist. And I was alone. You know, I just didn't know anybody. I didn't have any atheist friends. All my family and friends thought I was out of my mind or I was going through midlife or whatnot. And so to sort of vent a little bit about the decades I'd wasted and to find community, I created one. And it's called The Thinking Atheist. The Thinking Atheist isn't a person. It's an idea that we reject faith and we embrace reason. You know, we want to think about the challenges and opportunities before us. The website started in 2009. I did a radio show. I started radio podcasting in 2010. And I don't know how we rank, you know, in terms of podcast overall, but I've been very fortunate and very happy with the success we've had. We've got more than 42 million total downloads.
Yeah, you're
and,
just a little bit below
you know, more
us,
than though. 300 shows. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell. You know, I came late to skepticism. I came late to non-belief. But I'm here, you know, for what it's worth. And I think we're all doing what we can to try to encourage other people and further the conversation out there.
Mm-hmm. And just like Tyler was saying, what was that, Tyler, you were saying?
Oh, just that...
He's 42 million downloads?
Yeah, you rank pretty high up there. I think you're just a couple behind us.
No, just I'm sure you guys are right on my heels.
Yes. And, of course, that was the velvety voice of Seth Andrews.
He's a very gracious gentleman, isn't he?
And, you know, almost 10 years now, November 2018, this coming year, is going to be 10 year of the Thinking Atheist radio podcast.
Yeah, wow. very popular, that's, and rightly so.
That's amazing. Rightly so.
Absolutely. I believe he does have the most popular atheist-related podcast radio show out there. And well-deserved, obviously. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, when you have good thoughts and easy to listen to, you got the right combination.
He's got that voice, right? Yeah, he's got that superb voice.
I know.
He really has that radio announcer voice. I mean, I'm so jealous. I wish. Now, that comment there that Tyler made at the time, for some reason we had an issue that he could only hear me during an interview for some reason. He couldn't hear the other microphones. So I had to kind of relay that to him. So, but we made the interview work nonetheless, so.
Yeah, it was a good interview.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a great interview.
Hopefully we can get him again this year and talk to him some more about what's going on in the activist movement.
Oh, he knows he's welcome anytime.
Oh, of course. I mean, the guy in such a high demand anyway. I mean, he's an activist, a professional activist now in a way, right? I mean, that's what he does for a living now. He does his show. He's got plenty of Patreon goals and people are giving him money, and he does talks all over the United States, all over. He's even been to Australia giving his talks, so.
Yeah, he's a good representative of atheism, isn't he?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a great story, too, from a guy who was completely in the Christian faith as a Christian broadcaster, and all of a sudden to do that 180 turn, that's a pretty remarkable story.
Mm-hmm. Number six.
Okay, coming in at number six is our old friend Arn Raw.
Oh,
we always love Arn. We love Arn. He is, without a doubt, probably one of the hardest working men out there when it comes to atheism. He always does new speeches every time, which is difficult, very difficult. And this year we invited him on because he put out this video series about debunking the flood. And it was debunking the flood, you know, from an archaeological point of view or a climate point of view or a geological point. Yeah, exactly. All these different points of views. He's got like eight of those, and it completely destroys everything you can think about Noah and the flood.
Well, he's got a great scientific background, and
he's doing incredible
such a good
work.
Recall, regardless of what it is that you're talking about.
His educational
in the evolutionary
videos.
Process. He can nail it.
Yes.
His educational videos that he does for the, I guess it's
Phylogeny geared. Project.
Yeah, it's geared towards teenagers.
Yeah.
And
they're super educational.
They're something else to watch.
They are something else. And the project he's doing, the Phylogeny project he's doing, that he's trying to, I hope he brings it to completion because it's going to become an incredible tool. I mean, right now I'm trying to follow the videos, and he's going through evolution like step by step by step, and all the classes and all that. It's like, oh my God.
And it is actually amazing.
It's a biology course in itself. It's like,
He's an educator. Pure and simple. He's an educator.
He absolutely is. And he's always a great guy to have on board, and he's always super friendly. And we love having him, and I can't wait to one day go to Texas with my bike and actually have a ride with him.
You should have a ball, and he'd love having you.
I'm sure he would. I'm sure he would. So let's listen in to Arn Raw explain debunking the flood.
Think about it, a 5,000 or 6,000 word speech, you know, and I very rarely go off the cuff. There's very rarely times when I can do that. A lot of times I have to have research stuff. It also has to match up with a PowerPoint, and then, you know, everything's got to be worded exactly so, because I know that I'm going to have tens of thousands of pedantic SOBs watching my video, and, you know, I know what the comment section looks like, and if you ever actually do get something wrong, oh, hell.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's calling you on it.
Arn is definitely...
you can't just say, I misspoke. There's no excuse.
Arn is definitely probably the hardest working atheist in the movement by far. But today...
has the most fun.
Try.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He has the most fun, certainly. Today, Arn, we're talking about the series of videos you did for disproving Noah's flood. The first question I got to ask, I guess, is why Noah's flood? Why go with that?
Well, isn't it sad that we have to do this anymore? Right. I mean, this is the 21st century, really? We got to have this goddamn conversation? Shit. And I've been thinking about doing this series for years and years and years, and there was a time when I thought, okay, we're finally over it. Enough people understand that the flood just never happened. But no, I live in Texas where every representative of my state government, all of them, believe that the flood really happened.
No, yeah, that's just sad.
Ouch.
No. Yeah, and so now that the federal government is in the same niche, the rest of the country is going to start understanding this too, because everybody in the federal government says that, you know, that the Earth is 5,500 years old, and the, you know, and that's the extent of human history and so forth. These are the Trump advisors that are saying these sorts of things. So, and then Mike Pence, you know, our beloved vice president, I did a video about him where he was talking about, can't we just teach evolution is just a theory? I know that there's got to be some extra level criminal cause to backhand a vice president, but I still have these little visions.
Yes, that was Arn Raw.
That was awesome. Yeah, what an awesome show.
The thing that's most fun about Arn is that you get the scholar and the biker.
Yes!
And they collide in this magnificent personality where he's you learn something and you just have so much fun listening to him, and you never know where he's going to go. You have no idea. He can start out on this very scholarly level, and then it can just degrade into a bad
he's
joke.
He's relatable.
And it's wonderful.
He's totally relatable. He's the guy that doesn't come out of academia. He doesn't come out as a professor or anything like that. He looks like the biker that walks from next door.
Yeah.
And he speaks with such eloquence, and he explains it, and he's bang. And you cannot help but love Arn.
No, I wonder if it's because he comes from Texas. I think that's how... It's frustrating, you know, having lived there for so long myself. It's frustrating, but he makes the most of it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he really does.
And his lovely wife, Lalandra, too. And she was just a pearl. And they were just an awesome, awesome couple. And they've been on the show. I think that he is the guest that we've had on the most.
Four times?
Yeah, three, four times for sure over the years there. And I know full well that I can always, if I find a good reason to give him a call, that he'll say sure. He'll come back on the show. So we'll probably have him again in the next year.
If you're going to do one with him, Kevin, do something on education itself. Because him and his wife are very big on education.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Absolutely. We can always count on that.
Yeah.
We can always count on that. Oh, okay. Hey, we're halfway through already.
Whoa, good for us.
No. I don't believe you.
Number five.
All right, coming in at number five is the winner from last year, our old friend David Fitzgerald. Now, last year, he was the highest downloaded show, and we did a look at St. Paul. And it's still a very highly rated show for amongst all the shows that we have. And this year we had him on, and he was talking about his latest book, which was Jesus Mything in Action. David is also one of these guys that, you know, I remember the first time I interviewed David. He basically said, okay, well, let me unfriend a few people on Facebook so I can friend you. And he did. And then we had the interview, and then we had a computer glitch, and we lost the interview. So then I went back to him and said, I'm so sorry, Dave. I lost the interview. Computer froze, something like that. I said, is there a possibility we could do it again at some point? I said, yeah, let's do it again. Like, I think it was like the day or tomorrow or something like that. I said, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So we ended up redoing the interview. And that's how, you know, the extra step he took, you know, for people. And he's just a superb guy that way.
He is.
He absolutely is. And he's one of our favorites as well.
He
and
sure is.
Absolutely. He's been on the show several times, too. I think him and Arn are the two guests we've had the most.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have him again in 2018 in his latest book that's coming out. And we'll have him in February.
Keep on writing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But this is going to be different because it's not I believe the book that just came out is not a historicity book. It's actually just a book of fiction. It's just like fiction. So that's going to be an interesting interview.
Fiction, so it falls right in.
That makes for good conversation, too.
It falls right in with all the religious books.
Absolutely does.
Fiction, you know.
So let's listen in to David Fitzgerald about his book, Jesus, Mything in Action.
But even if there was a Jesus, as Robert Price has pointed out, for all extents and purposes, there isn't one anymore. Because everything that we know about that guy comes from sources that were written to have nothing to do with anybody who actually lived in the first century.
Yes, indeed.
And that is good for atheists to know.
I've got a friend of mine who's studying to become a Christian apologist, and we get into debates, him and I. He's a really nice Christian, you know, and I'm not going to name him, but he always challenges me. He says it's not fair. He says, you know,
You're telling me that you don't think Jesus existed, but yet you're not applying the same standard of evidence that you're applying for, example, Alexander the Great. He says, we have very little evidence for Alexander the Great either. What would your response to that be?
The opposite is true. It's like everything we have on anybody in the ancient world, Alexander the Great's a great example. We have multiple lines of evidence that support the idea that there was an Alexander the Great, as opposed to just a myth of Alexander the Great or a legend of Alexander the Great. Mm-hmm. We've got physical evidence. We've got written evidence. We've got the actual physical brute facts that things could not have happened unless he actually had taken his army and gone through all these places and conquered them. You couldn't just fake that. Whereas everything we know about Jesus, it can all be explained by people believing what someone told them about that even if there had been a Jesus, he basically is irrelevant for what became Christianity.
Number four.
Our number four spot goes to none other than Dr. Jerry Coyne. Great evolutionary biologist. The man is a pearl and totally underrated in the speaking circuit, I would say. And he comes in to talk to us about why evolution is true and why Christians and people that are theists in any way, shape, or form anyway will have a tendency to fight against evolution. So let's listen in to Dr. Jerry Coyne.
Evolution is so anathema to believers. It's not just fundamentalists who are opposed to evolution in America. 42 or 43% of Americans are young earth creationists when it comes to humans. And those aren't all fundamentalist, Bible-bashing, snake-handling people. So I was just wondering, what is it about evolution that makes it so despised, uniquely amongst the sciences, to the average American? Canada, I think, is somewhat more enlightened about this, although I don't know the statistics. But so I started reading theology, and that was my downfall.
Oh, no!
Reading theology is like, the old Uncle Remus thing about getting stuck in the tar baby because you can't get out of it. I mean, I was both horrified and fascinated. Fascinated because apparently intelligent human beings could believe in such insane stuff, and horrified because they believed in such insane stuff, which, was palpably untrue in many cases. And so eventually I read more and more and more theology, from the most simplistic theology of the creationists through the sort of middle brass stuff like C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity, all the way up to highfalutin, what I call sophisticated theology, people like Alvin Plantinga, John Hott, and others. And at the end of that endeavor, I wrote a book about it called Faith Versus Fact, which was explicitly anti-religious in the sense that I said that science and religion are incompatible and that religion wasn't a way of knowing anything about the world. So, both of those books have captured some of the public attention. So I guess if I'm known to the public, it's that and maybe some of my popular writings.
And that was Dr. Jerry Coyne.
Yeah, he doesn't Jerry appear Coyne. Live at any of the events, does he?
I met him in Imaginal Religion. Oh. Yeah, he's not as out there as a lot of people are.
Yeah,
he's not as quite as well known, but he should be because the man is absolutely brilliant.
He is. Well, he and Peter Boghossian are pretty close friends. It'd be a lot of fun to be able to sit in on a I mean, I probably wouldn't be able to understand it after they after they got through with the greetings part of it,
the evolutionist and the philosopher versus us.
it was great that he agreed to come on. I sort of
bribed him with a bottle of Crown Royal, so that kind of helped.
That's a good bribe.
Yeah, it's a good bribe. I thought when he came to up here for Imaginal Religion,
you're not bribing me.
Oh, because you're already here. Oh. I usually bribe you here with coffee.
Well, that's a pretty good bribe. It's not as good as Crown Royal.
We're easy.
Damn.
When you came to Imaginal Religion, I tried to make myself a good Canadian ambassador, and I was giving out these bottles of Crown Royal to the guests, and knowing full well that eventually I'll be calling on them and say, "Hey, you remember me? I'm the guy that gave you a bottle of Crown Royal." All of a sudden, there's that link, right? I say, "Oh yeah, I remember you."
Yeah, the gleam in his eye.
Exactly. Did the same thing for many of the guests. All right.
Number three.
Oh, coming on number three. Now, this is one of my favorite because, my God, we had a blast with this one. This was the show we did with Eli, Tom, and Cecil of Cognitive Dissonance. Oh, these guys were a riot, and it was just to let them go.
The glory hole.
The glory hole, exactly. These guys, when they get on the microphone, they just kind of take over. And the show there, the clip that we have is actually... I just pressed record, and we haven't even started recording like I usually do, and they just went on a complete tangent, and it's like...
Oh, it was good that you pressed record.
Oh, yes, and then we're debating, you know, Canadian whiskey and stuff like that, so it's a mishmash of a whole bunch of things, but it's just a wild ride, is these three guys, and...
lots of fun.
Yes, and right now we're actually working on... Hopefully we can have Eli back in April. I'd love to have Eli for around April 1st so we can discuss the science of jokes. And the science of humor.
Fun. That'd be great.
So Christina's not here right now, but she's working on getting that. So we'll talk about that a bit later. But for now, let's listen in to Tom, Cecil, Cognitive Dissonance, and our friend Eli Bosnick.
It's because you're eating her food, right?
That's what it is.
What are you eating? Flowers or...
I mean, because... vegan saltines.
That sounds absolutely yummy.
And water.
Gross.
Guys.
I would rather eat prison sex.
Jordan Peterson makes $47,000 a month on Patreon.
Yeah, I told you, I am totally willing to say women are less than men. I'm totally willing to do this. All we got to do is just get paid for it.
I heard this the other day, yesterday. Thomas tagged me in it, and I was like, ha, ha, ha. And then I went to bed, and I literally lay there in bed with just that sentence passing in a circle around my brain until 4 in the morning. And I woke up this morning thinking it, and I have literally not thought about anything except that. For 48 hours.
Gosh. You are so Jewish.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you guys for coming. I guess I will press record any minute now. You know, David Smalley warned me about you guys.
Got to get it started somehow, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right. If you guys don't mind, I'll just, when I press the record, I'll just introduce you guys really quickly.
Yeah, sure. I want to ask real quick before we start.
Sure.
We have our air conditioner on. Is it making a weird humming sound? Because if it is, we can shut it off.
Barely hearing it, if it is. Okay. Because I'm barely noticing.
Cool.
Okay. Perfect.
Am I on this or is it just you guys?
Yeah. Oh, no, you're here.
It can be just Tom. It could be just Eli and I.
Okay.
No, I insist that Tom be there too. I've got a score to settle with him.
Ooh.
I'm keeping the dog, so.
Hey.
All right. Recording in 3, 2, 1. Well, online with us, we got a hell of a treat. We got our old friend Eli Bosnick has returned. Hi, Eli. How you doing?
Gavin, thanks so much for having me.
And I've heard you brought your best friend, Cecil, from Cognitive Dissonance, as well as Tom, who's a great fan of Canadian whiskey.
I did. No.
Guys,
nobody's
welcome.
Best friend.
Welcome
best
to the friend. Fraser Valley, gentlemen.
My other best friend. I'm going to tell you a little story. My wife really loves Cognitive Dissonance. I can't listen to it because I end up making jokes across the universe of the podcast. And people are like, I don't listen to their show. And I'm like, you should. You'll get this great joke. And so I don't listen to it. And the other day I was like, you know what? I earned some cog diss. I'm having a bad day. Jordan Peterson makes $47 a month on Patreon. I turn it on and it was their Best Friends Day episode. And I was surrounded by other dogs. And I was
wearing our best friends. Ooh, surrounded by other dogs.
I, of course, wished each other best friends.
How could we do otherwise?
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, outrageous.
And we're like 45 seconds in and fired
we didn't
across
get each
the ball
other
right.
Gifts.
We didn't.
My hooker that I got you is on back order again. Yeah. It's a specialty item. She is not cheap. I'm just saying. Well, no, I mean, she's cheap, but not cheap. You know, you know what I mean.
Well, for listeners of the Lethal Valley, this show has been taken over by Cognitive Dissonance at this point. And the comments of Tom, Cecil, and I are not necessarily those of Lethal Valley subsidiaries or sponsors, et cetera, et cetera. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us, and welcome to the Fraser Valley. You guys are extremely popular south of the 49th. You're not as well known up here in the north. Would you be so kind to give us a Reader's Digest intro of who you are?
Yeah, we're not as well known among the moose people or what. When you guys get electricity or whatever in your log cabin.
Hey, I got a bone to pick with you with Canadian whiskey there, sir. But anyway, I'll let you go first.
Not whiskey. Hold on. No, stop. We're stopping this whole thing. Yeah. That is not whiskey. I'm sorry. That is blended sadness. I hear this bullshit, you know, oh, it's so smooth. It's smooth because it's fucking water.
It's water. Excuse me.
Water and of beaver expedition. Do for money up there.
No, I understand that.
They just squeeze a bunch of beaver pelts. Right? And the first pressing is the best. And then as you work your way down, you get Canadian whiskey.
Yeah, Canadian whiskey is like the 14th pressing of fermented beaver pelt juice.
Well, first of all, I will let you know that as Canadians, we have a tendency to drink American alcohol to sober up. So, ha! Huh, grew on that.
Oh, wow. My God.
It's like having the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges and the Saturday Night Live after party going on absolutely. All at the same time.
I'm laughing the whole time I'm listening to this. My God.
Eyes were watering.
The beaver pelts and the whole thing about Canadian whiskey. You weren't here when we did that interview that night, Nancy. It's a shame.
I wasn't here.
But my God, these guys are just absolutely hilarious. And they just take over.
It's just chaos. It's just absolute chaos.
Exactly. It's funny, funny chaos. And God knows, I sure hope we can bring them back one day.
Bring them back when they sober up and see how we like them.
Actually,
you
know what? I'd like to see them do a blind whiskey tasting test.
And see
which whiskeys they like. Not which tastes better. Which whiskeys do you like? And just line up 10 whiskeys.
And you serve nothing but Crown Royal. Just different flavors of Crown Royal.
No, I just thought, because I've got some Jack Daniels at home. Some special Jack Daniels whiskey, and I've got Crown. And the Jack Daniels bottle is 3/4 full, the Crown's almost empty. You tell me what the difference is. I cannot stomach the Jack. After drinking all the different whiskeys I've drank from around the world, I can't stomach the Jack Daniels anymore. It's like, it tastes like cough medicine.
I think Tom would have a disagreement with you on this.
Oh.
Poor Eli, we were at the beginning of the show there. He's talking about Jordan Peterson, which is he's a bit of a philosopher, I think, out in the Toronto area, and he's been anti-LGBTQ, and he's got a lot of followers on the alt-right. And
oh, wow.
This guy is doing talks all around the world. They call him a social critic, and he's, like you said, he was making $47,000 a month from people giving him money on Patreon goals and stuff like that. And you like say, oh, wow, I can't believe this, you know. So it's
47 grand a month.
Yeah, all right. At the time that we
just
were recording,
to say
this,
I don't agree. Just to say I don't agree with that lifestyle.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Pretty much. Right. Just goes that the alt right is absolutely ready to fund you if you're willing to say these kind of things in public. There was an interview he also did with on a side note there with Sam Harris. It's extremely, extremely difficult to actually listen to it. Not because the guy is, you know, aggravating or something like that. It's just it goes into the nebulous and the philosophy, and it's like, it's too much. For me, it was too much. I can't even make it through the entire interview. But I also saw another interview with him where they asked him if he actually believed in the resurrection of Jesus. And after about 2 minutes of silence, he basically said, I don't know. He said, I don't know because I don't know the limits of the human body. It's like, really? Really, dude, you really need to explore all the entire limits of the human body to pronounce yourself on whether or not somebody can resurrect from the dead? But this is the kind of guy we're dealing with, right? It's vague answers, and anyway. So we'll see.
Well, we'll have to fortify ourselves and get them back.
Oh, yes, absolutely. it'd be hilarious as hell to get them back.
Number two.
Okay, we're coming down to the stretch here, so it seems that our audience has a thing for historicity. Because our number two spot actually goes to historian Richard Carrier, which we had the pleasure of having here in person several years ago.
And we did.
And he was a great guy, and we had a fun time with him, and he came and gave a lecture.
And a debater.
Absolutely.
He really is a great debater.
If you actually, if you go way back in our archives, and I mean like episode 3 or 4, somewhere around there, is Richard Carrier versus Michael Horner, which he did right here in Abbotsford at the time. So they were debating the history. So of course, he just completely destroyed Horner, in my opinion.
Almost a full house.
It was. Yeah. It was actually packed. The place was packed, so it was pretty cool. But this time, of course, we decided to interview him on science throughout history and how different ancient peoples were relating to science and the curiosity and all that. He had a very interesting response to that, especially when it came to Christianity. So let's listen in to Dr. Richard Carrier.
Do you feel in your research you've discovered maybe that the ancients, for lack of a better term, let's call them the ancients, have a natural scientific curiosity as much as we have now? Maybe less, maybe more?
Yes, in fact, it's very distinctive of Greece and Rome is this full integration of the value and merits of curiosity. It was fundamental, both religious, among them, both the religious and the non-religious, pagans and atheists or agnostics of the period, pantheists, you might call them, of that period, were all very much highly esteemed curiosity about nature that drove scientific inquiry. It's very, very different from what position the Christians took and definitely solidified in the Middle Ages, which is curiosity is dangerous. It leads to heresy. So they were very, very suspicious of curiosity. It was not a value they supported.
The Christian attitude of curiosity is not a virtue. Is that a uniquely Christian thing, or is that more of a most religions had that kind of mentality at the time?
It really does seem to be uniquely Christian. It may derive from some of the more conservative radical sects of Judaism from which Christianity arose, but it wasn't really a typical feature of Judaism even. So it does look like something that was kind of like the virulent new attitude in Christianity that Christianity introduced to the world. And then, of course, you know, once they took over the world or the Western world, they solidified that as a fundamental to our culture. And then, you know, by the time you get to the Renaissance, you have these few Christian mavericks who want to rebel against this Christian model of being anti-curiosity. And they had to fight really hard rhetorically and in every other way to get curiosity respected again. And really, you look around today, they still haven't fully won. There are still the number of Christians who are anti-curiosity just shrinks and shrinks. There are still a lot of anti-science Christians today. But they did ultimately prevail by the time you get to the Scientific Revolution, and that was actually what led to the Scientific Revolution, was finally overthrowing this thousand-year-old Christian regime that was anti-curiosity. And they were anti other things, too. They were anti the idea of evidence as the final authority, that evidence can trump any authority. It can trump the Bible. It can trump the Pope. No authority can stand above evidence, and therefore you always go to the evidence to argue a case. This respect for empiricism as the final authority on facts of nature and everything else, that was also not really integrated in Christianity. Christians were very much against that. The Bible came first, usually. And they were willing to compromise on that in some respects during the Middle Ages, but you still had factions who were against allowing evidence to trump an authority, and that had to be argued back again. So the pagans already believed that evidence can trump authority. They were not a scripture-based religion. But it took a while to like recover that once it was lost in the Middle Ages, this respect for empiricism.
And, of course, that was Dr. Richard Carrier.
You know, of all the people that we've had on our broadcast over the past 3.5, we're going to go on 4 years.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, tell me if you agree with this, I think if we were to give an award for research, that he would top everybody. He is really the ultimate researcher. He gets in there and digs until there's nothing left, and then he gets back up and digs again. He's fanatic. I use this word as a compliment. He just is fanatical about getting his facts straight and with supporting evidence. He's really fabulous at doing that.
Actually, that's a lot of people that read his books have a tendency to say exactly that. It's sometimes they'll say it's overkill. It's overkill, but it is because it's so detailed, and he lifts up every rock nook and cranny,
absolutely.
And he does absolutely everything. He's got notes for everything. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
I wish I had, like...
Well, when you look at the opposing audience, the people who would oppose his ideas,
yes.
If he doesn't show that level of detail, you can be sure that there's going to be people opposing him who are going to lift those rocks he didn't lift and bring that to the forefront and say, look, he missed this.
You're absolutely correct, right? to the point that his critics, the only thing they really have to go on is that he goes against the grain. He's essentially not part of the majority of people. That's the only thing they have against
the research.
Them.
See, he's done the research and covered all the bases.
Exactly.
So they have no argument. There is no counter argument to make because he's already covered those points.
You're absolutely correct. There is no counter argument to Richard Kerr aside saying that he doesn't agree with somebody like Bart Ehrman or something like that. There's you cannot fault his research. You cannot, you know, say that he's biased or anything like that. He is absolutely 100% honest, and he's done the work. He's done incredible work.
Yeah, when he is in writing a new book, he just devotes all of his time.
So the only attack you could possibly have against a man like that is either, you know, oh, well, you know, you're the one lonely voice in the desert compared to another, which is not true, or you could might have to attack personally due to, like, some kind of ad hominem. It's the only thing you can have against a guy like Richard Garrett. Absolutely.
Yeah, he is. He's intellectually honest.
He is absolutely top notch. Absolutely.
I think he expects a great deal from himself.
Yeah.
You know, he pushes himself to make sure that if he says anything, that it's got the backup evidence.
And the funny thing is, the way when he explains that, it doesn't seem like work to him. He's just so used to doing it that way because he was taught that way. That, you know, people say, "Wow, you don't need it." It's like, I don't know if you remember, if you look back in the interview, he did a dissertation for his PhD, and they basically said, okay, you basically have like 10 of them in here. You just need to pick one. You know, he says he had so much work into that. He said, oh, okay. So even when you're a dissertation at a university level, and they tell you, okay, you just bring it down a bit here.
Bring it down. You're going a little too far here.
You get too far. You get too much stuff here. It's like, okay.
This is actually, in his case, way too far.
Yeah, but when you get a guy who just loves the research on its own merits, he just likes to do the research.
Exactly.
He's not going to stop.
No, you can't. You can't fault him at all.
No.
Oh,
excellent,
right.
Excellent role model for someone who wants to get into the research field, though.
All right, who you guys can give me a drum roll here? We're coming out to our number one.
Number one.
I don't know if I can or not. Let's see here. No.
The excitement is building.
No good. I haven't got anything to do a drum roll on.
Anyway, well, maybe I'll add that in post. And our number one spot is, of course, you know, speaking, I told you, the audience seems to like the historicity thing, Robert M. Price.
Woohoo!
Robert Price, of course, a biblical scholar and, you know, a fantastic guy to have on the show. And we asked him about the historicity of the Bible characters. Because there always seems to be, you know, we talk about the historicity of Jesus, but what about all the other Bible characters? Because there's a lot of people in the Bible. And
Like Moses.
Yeah, and all these
Abraham.
Other people. And Robert Price just gave us a nice long answer the way only he can do it. And let's listen in.
So, this is a very broad question, sir. I guess it will probably take the remainder of the show. But who do you feel, in your mind, is a character, a real person in the characters of the Bible as compared to the ones that we are probably safe to say they were mythical?
I would say that in the Old Testament, you have several of the kings of Israel and Judah who were very likely historical figures. For instance, there are extra-biblical references to Israel, the northern kingdom, and they call it the House of Omri. I believe that phrase occurs in the Bible as well, named after Omri, a major king, then names another version of the more familiar Omar. And there must have been several. This is ironic because in many ways these are the least interesting characters in the Bible. But before them, like, it seems to me that Saul, David, and Solomon, for instance, probably were not historical figures. I have my doubts about Jeroboam and Rehoboam, who were right after Solomon. There's the reason for doubting Solomon and David is the stories that deal with them have an awful lot to do with the planning for or the building of the Jerusalem temple, and archaeological evidence or the lack of it casts real doubt as to whether there ever was such a structure. And if that goes, Solomon sort of goes with it, because there's no real evidence for that any more than there is for the Exodus, which is one of the reasons that Moses is not to be considered historical, but I'd say nobody before these later kings in the Old Testament, and a few non-Israelite ones, like we know there was a Nebuchadnezzar, we know there was a Belshazzar in Babylon, we know there was Cyrus the Persian, though the Bible sometimes gets wrong who was a king, who was a regent, and all that, but at least they were historical characters. Whether Ezra and Nehemiah, a more recent figure, still existed, that's up in the air. They might have existed, but they could just be fictional faces for the group sent by Persia to sort of recreate Jewish religion after the exile. The Maccabees are certainly historical figures. They're mentioned in Josephus's history, and they left enough of a mark that you couldn't really explain the subsequent history without them, and their fight against the Seleucid Empire and so forth. Then when you get into New Testament times, it's pretty clear that Herod the Great existed, though not so clear that the slaughter of the innocents, pretty much the only reason he's mentioned in the Gospels, it was not clear that that is historical. It seems to be a rewrite of Josephus the historian's account of the nativity of Moses. And so there was a Herod the Great, but what we read about him, not so sure. Similarly, Herod Antipas and Archelaus are mentioned, and the stories there are a bit less colorful, but there's no reason to doubt they existed. Joseph Caiaphas, the high priest, they found his tomb. We know he existed, but again, the problem is what the Gospels say about these people is highly dubious. The notion that they were having a trial or even a hearing for Jesus on Passover Eve is really absurd. It's like whoever wrote this was not aware that all devout Jews had to be at home on this highest of holy days, and got the high priest in night court? Not likely.
And that was our number one spot, Robert M. Price, the Bible Geek.
Yeah, another researcher.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, the interesting thing about him is that you can take the Bible and biblical scholars and so forth, and we're all aware of those. But what Robert does is, it's like he's a councilman in a small town, and all of these people are in the town with him, and he can point out where they live, who they're married
to.
And he can tell you, oh, well, this guy, you know, shouldn't have been here because, and it's like a gossip columnist. Don't you think? I mean, he refers to them, you know, as people who are contemporaries, and he can almost give you their eye color, you know, but
he's got the whole story. He's got the whole story laid out.
Yes. Yes.
All the different angles that the Bible talks from.
Yeah.
And like you said, he can pick off, well, this story doesn't really make sense because these three stories say this.
Yes, exactly.
And this person couldn't have been there because, well, I mean, his wife was over here and he was doing this. And it's like, wow, nobody ever put it together like that before.
No.
Right? He researched it and learned it, and like the guy who wrote the book kind of thing. Yeah.
if you listen to the show, you realize really quickly that the vast majorities of the characters in the Bible are most likely very fictional. You know, you'll have a very few minor things or minor characters that seem to attach the Bible into history at some point, but the vast majority of them probably super fictional. And it's an easy thing to say. It'd be like us saying, oh, you know, the prime minister came in today and sat down with us and had coffee, and you write this down. And, you know, because you just take a person throughout history and just write down that they were here and did that, but with a bit of more research and the tools we have today, realized that's not at all what happened, if anything like that happened at all.
Yeah, hopefully he'll come back and
I keep hearing the idea that a lot of the stories in the Bible were just that. They were stories. That were meant to be orated in front of a group, much the way that we do, if you've heard the speaking, what do they call that? It's poetry. It's a form of poetry now. and back then it would have been the same idea. It was like a stage play of poetry, spoken history, but not history. It's a story to tell. And they're saying that, yeah, they grouped these stories together and formed the basis for what we know as the Bible. And, well, probably most of it's BS.
Yeah.
Stories.
I like to liken the Bible as some of the stuff we see today. For example, if you're a bit of a comic book geek or something like that, you might realize that, did you know that Muhammad Ali fought Superman in a comic book?
No.
Well, you see, this is what I'm saying. This is what the Bible is. You take a real person like Muhammad Ali, and you add a fictional character like Superman, right? And I think the Bible is exactly that. You know, they'll add a real character throughout history, some king somewhere, but that king somewhere spoke to the superhero Moses or something. And this is, I think, is how you anchor
for the purpose of the story and telling the story to the group.
It gives it credibility.
And let's face it, if you go to a play today or to a one of these spoken poetry things, this is what you get. You get the same idea. Mm. We still do it today. It's a form of entertainment. And that's what I heard a lot of the stories in the Bibles were, was this form of entertainment.
Exactly.
Like you said, they would take something that's real and then they would add story to it.
Yeah, they take a superhero and then they anchor him or her into, well, in the Bible it's going to be him, obviously, but they anchor the character into real life cities or positions to give credibility to the story.
Sure.
And I think the Bible is mostly that. So, anyway, makes all the sense.
I'm with you on it. I'm with you. I'm with Robert M. Price.
Yeah.
And, exactly. I mean, let's face it, this stuff, it couldn't have been real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Hopefully, 2018, he'll be back with us.
And I hope so.
We'll get another group of stories to entertain us.
Absolutely. But, by the way, Muhammad Ali did beat Superman in the comic book.
Really?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Well, that's because
That.
They had something that took Superman's powers away. So.
Oh, I was going to say, from the totally wrong point of view, the racist, let's take the racist slant on it. So you're telling me that a black guy beat a white superhero?
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Wow. No, really. That's kind of awesome. I didn't even know that comic existed.
Oh, yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was our best of 2017. Left of the Valley.
Good list.
Hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah, a lot of good memories come back about the conversations, you know, and the people and just the way we all interacted during the broadcast. It was a lot of fun. We learned a lot, didn't we?
Well, I like listening to these people firsthand. I mean, I've seen them on YouTube, and then all of a sudden, I'm live in the room with them.
And you're talking with them.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It's something always great about that. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show today, guys. Our last of the year. And I will wish you a happy 2018. Health and wealth to all of you. And if you get the wealth, don't forget to wish it to you.
Ha! You'll get a cut.
I'll get a cut.
Yeah, new things, new episodes, new guests. It's going to be an exciting year coming up.
You can always follow us at leftofthevalley.com. You can follow us on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter at LETV Podcast. You can send an email, leftatvalley@outlook.com. You can also follow our sister show, So You Think You're a Skeptic, that airs on Facebook every week. And if you'd be so kind, you can give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. That really helps others find the show. Coming up, new year, new project. We'll be starting the year fairly quickly we'll be talking to our old friend Damien Gillis, the filmmaker. We haven't seen him in a couple years. We'll be talking about the wild salmon situation.
Oh.
Very cool.
The fight of the wild salmon versus the farm salmon. That should be interesting.
That's been a controversy for quite a while. It's interesting.
It has been.
Yeah, okay.
It has been. And of course, on the 20th, we'll be talking to our friend Michael Shermer. He'll be back and he'll be talking about his latest release. So that'll be great. And we're going to finish the month of January with talking to our old friend Phil Ferguson.
That'll be good.
From aptly named show, The Phil Ferguson Show. He'll be talking about the whole Bitcoin thing.
Oh, I got to tell you something. I got to tell you something really funny. I went to Google. I love Google. I went to Google Phil Ferguson because I wanted to kind of refresh. And as I'm looking up Phil Ferguson, there's a whole line of photos of this guy with crocheted headgear. and there are about three or four pictures of Phil Ferguson with headgear that he knitted or crocheted that he puts up on the internet, and I'm going, wait a minute, that's not our Phil Ferguson. And then I realized that it was a Phil Ferguson from Australia. But when you look up Phil Ferguson, the first thing that comes up is this guy who knits and crochets his own really wild headgear and then posts the pictures. And it's really funny. So if you're looking up Phil Ferguson to get a background for our show, he's not the guy with the crocheted headgear.
Very good.
Patreon goal. Let's get a crochet headgear for the real Phil Ferguson, our Phil Ferguson.
We'll have to tell him that when he comes on.
And of course, as well in February, we'll be talking, like we said earlier on, we'll be talking to David Fitzgerald about his latest book. Starting the year really good.
Good, and the excellent. Girls will be back.
And the girls will be back.
Yeah, which is they better be. Wonderful.
They're all milking cows. Guys, thank you so much for joining me again today.
Thanks Happy for having us on.
Until next time. The system is broke down, working backwards, and the only action or tactic I plan to practice now is to attack them. The parties of God's hands are bloodstained, millions of murders by believers, and they're all in God's name. And let me take a sec, don't mean to sound so hateful, but I swear to God, pun intended, I find it disgraceful that many atheists are told to be quiet. You're not alone, speak your mind, time to let it be known. I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen, I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance and you just call it faith, and unsubstantiated claims, that's something to be